EXPID Prologue. EXPID is a planet where people with supernatural powers are born. It is almost a 50/50 chance. The planet is divided by races, rather than continents, and wars are fought often. Genocide has occurred for two races already, even though the differences are mostly cosmetic. All powers come from sentient crystals, aspects. They used to be divided by human, godly and universal aspects, but only the human ones remain. These are body, mind and soul. They are each kept inside a temple, which is taken care of by a master, who is replaced only upon death. 3 years ago from this story, a man brought a mysterious girl to a village of outcasts. She had total amnesia, not even knowing how to speak. She learned everything quickly, but she never remembered anything of her past. 3 years later, she discovered her power, and as the religious law mandates, she is required to go to a temple for training. The only other two miners in the village also discover their powers, and are invited as well. The man who brought her was hesitant about this. The masters themselves go to make sure she goes. This man then goes around the world, making sure she is treated harshly and even fixes fights with powerful enemies. Meanwhile, she is taken to take a test that will indicate if she can get training. It consists of watching three possible future events and survive. Chapter 1, Beginning of the End. Many years ago in the past, snow moved upward the dark sky. Even chunks of ice floated in midair, before moving upwards. A crystalline fog stung in the wind. Two men met in the never-ending icy field. "What's the report?" "Nothing good. The goddess has been reported dead."
"No."
"Then, all is lost. Or am I wrong?" "I wish you were. With all the masters dead, there is no hope." The two men had frozen tears in their cheeks. Their slump spoke of their demeanor. Their white coats made them almost invisible. A sucking sound filled their minds as the snow moved faster. The men were silent for a moment. Then a smaller figure came to them, while fighting with the wind. "Follow me to the temple, please."
"As you wish, ma'am."
Both men recognized Deidre's daughter. The girl was the youngest candidate to be a temple master ever. They had to follow her as temple guards. They walked slowly in the deep snow. The vacuum was stronger as they pressed on.
"Is it following us, ma'am?"
"Yes, we have to stop it. For mom." Both guards yelled for EXPID. But they felt empty and with little hope.
"How close is it?" asked one of the guards.
The girl didn't answer.
"Let's hurry."
They got to the tiled floor in front of the temple. There were holes everywhere.
"What the void ate away?
There are so many craters.
Please, be careful."
"Oh, this is so much blood." Next to one of the craters was a human hand. It was holding a sword, a hollow golden sword. There were black petals floating in the air.
"Mandragorian rose. The goddess died here."
Then they saw it, a gigantic worm, darker than anything they ever saw before. The speed it was moving was incredible. It filled most of the sky. As the creature opened its mouth, they knew it would swallow them in the temple. "Over here, a gray." A man in a smooth green coat waited at the door to the temple. This temple had never been used before. No one had ever been born with the aspect of void. "By everything that you love, concentrate. Give life to this building." The girl touched the door and closed her eyes. Her mother had been killed by this thing, her queen had been killed. All her adoptive family, everyone but this man. He was the last one. Her tears went down profusely. Rage welled up in her heart. She called the aspect in her mind. One of the guards recognized the man. He ran to greet him.
"Master Fairless. You're alive.
What should we do?"
Keep it busy for your families, for the planet. He had a face of determination, of hope. Both looked at each other's eyes for some time. It was an honor to know you, sire. Please take care of our country. Then both men shaked hands and prepared to die. Time changes facts into legends, then into myths. Stories are changed and retold, then they just disappear. Even when truly told, some stories are so fantastic, they just are out of grasp of understanding. Sit and listen this tale of fantastic worlds and wondrous powers, of heroes and villains. Listen once then again. Some stories only make sense after you hear them twice. A soft song from the heart helps the aching man to live on, and ale cools his stomach. Where's my wire mail? Coming, Pop. Most of the villagers of this town, the prairie, were here. Everyone liked the stories that the troubadour sang, even if they were too fantastic. The waitress went to get his drink. She called him father. But he had only brought her into this village. That was 3 years ago. Before this, there wasn't any other memory. Ice cold, said Ferdinand while gulping the ale. The traveling bard Ferdinand brought Eliza to the village on a foul night, at the end of the last war. The innkeeper Milka remembered that night well. She was always nervous when Ferdinand was around. Milka wanted to know if he were eating tonight. Probably not, my sweet. Maybe later. Eliza felt this was the perfect opportunity to tell him. I have water powers, said Eliza casually. Ferdinand couldn't help but spit the last of the ale as he heard that. So, when did you know? While playing with Mark. He has a power too. What is it? Then Mark appeared right in front of Ferdinand, making him fall from a seat. Mark laughed hard, then ran out the inn. The local prankster. He was well known in the village. Well, we have some prodigy there, said Ferdinand while checking his lip for cuts. I think Luke has a power too, but that kid always depressed, huh? Yeah. Luke is a little older than Eliza but younger than Mark. The three are the only miners in the village. He is the stepson of the local blacksmith. Eliza wanted to know his power. I know, Mark had hardened. Ferdinand interrupted. That's not nice, dear. Leave him alone. Not fair. I guess I'll have to ask him directly. Eliza went and got a cloth to clean the mess Ferdinand had made. She knew their discovery meant they had to become priests. It was tradition to do so. Training was conducted inside one of three temples. They only took a limited number of initiates each year. She wanted all three to be together, but she feared Luke might not have the willpower to enter. A strong will was necessary for the entrance test. So when will the masters come? Asked Eliza, while Ferdinand checked a wet spot on his clothes. Ferdinand was white-haired, his eyes were dark, like obsidian. He kept his hair almost hidden with a bandana. He had a trim beard and mustache. His clothes were patched with vivid colors, indicating all the regions he could travel, and that he was a bard. He looked middle-aged, handsome even, but probably much older. He also collected news and other tidbits. The masters knew him all too well. I'm sure they're on their way. Really? That quick? You are a special girl, Eliza. Ferdinand meant those words. Eliza was considered an odd beauty. Her jet black hair covered her back, her one-piece tight amber dress and her apron. Her race was unrecognizable. Jet black hair was unique in the world. Her mesmerizing light turquoise eyes shined in the light of the inn. Her young white, almost chiseled face attracted looks and stares. She was used to them. She always hid her pains with a smile. Her age seemed between an adult and a teenager. So how did it happen? What were you doing with Mark? Eliza tried to remember what happened. It was around a week ago inside the inn. Can you hurry up? I'm dying of thirst here, snickered Mark. Wait your turn, you brat, replied Eliza. Ha, this service sucks, these waitresses, said Mark as he dodged a mug she threw. No, no, please don't fight, said Milka, the innkeeper and owner. Milka was a 9-foot hulking woman, broad shoulders, middle-aged, with a coarse but strangely gentle voice. She was from the gladiatorial capital of Kergine. Her cooking was world-famous. The inn was more a restaurant, but its wooden multi-floor structure held all of the comforts of a resort. Mark ran out the door as Milka was talking. Eliza ran out following him. He had a small frame, like the body of a child, dark brown hair and a pageboy gut. He was much older than Eliza, but looked younger. Mark's clothes were made of leather, tanned almost black. He always wore these clothes. He was good at hiding. Eliza pushed through the woods but could not see Mark. The woods were most thick behind the inn. She looked for movement but couldn't see any. Then she smelled ale. Eliza shot a stream of water towards the smell, hitting an invisible figure.
Hey!
That's not fair, said Mark. Ha! You didn't know about my power, did you? No, but how did you see me? I didn't. I smelled you, Stinko. Then Eliza realized that Mark had turned invisible. Hey, when did you learn that? I don't know. Maybe after seeing you nude last night. Eliza blushed. How dare you? And Mark was hit by water again. We were just playing last week. Ferdinand knew this could become a long story. That's okay. Can't keep them waiting. The crowd was waiting, eager to have fun. He sang and drank throughout the night. Even Mark came in to listen. Everyone danced and ate. But the night was short, and eventually the villagers went to bed. All this work. We need some help, grunted Eliza, while picking up a pile of mugs and plates. At least it was much easier now to wash the dishes. I'll check tomorrow in the capital, said Milka. Eliza started to remember the day that Milka explained about the aspects and powers. It was on an afternoon inside the kitchen inn. That was a special place for Eliza, a place full of memories. Milka would prepare the meals. Eliza would ask questions. Where do we get our power? The aspects chose you. Before you were born. The crystals? Yes, the ones in the temples. What about the ones who don't have one? Eliza had found a worm in a vegetable. They lived normal lives, no more than 100. Eliza was confused, remembering that everyone in the village was over 100, and the more power you have, the longer you live. Milka then hurriedly started to cut onions. She must miss her parents. They probably died of old age when she was still a child. Eliza wished to know about her parents. She was grateful to Milka. She just wished to know what happened before.
Before when?
Why can't I remember? I'm going to clean the tables. Then Eliza grabbed a cloth and left. She wanted to sob too. Ferdinand picked up the tips and was putting the loot in its case. He was thinking how was he miscalculated her age. He was distraught, thinking of taking Eliza to another town. He needed more time. You okay, Pops? No, I'm fine, just a little tired. He had to at least try. Then maybe he could formally prepare for what was to come. He picked up his belongings and got ready. Hey Eliza, are you done?
Almost. Why?
Come and follow me. Give me your hand. His voice was commanding and different than before. She dropped what she was doing and followed him without questioning. Eliza would trust her life to this man. He was all the family she had. Her eyes were glazed, and she started to walk strangely. As he got to the door, a figure stood there blocking his path. By his dark blue hair and dark skin, You knew he was from Volusia, the aristocratic capital, by the crystal blue armor he wore, blue cape, and him floating in the air. You knew he was the master of mind going somewhere, Master Farah. He said when Ferdinand choked him so he wouldn't finish. Ferdinand quickly took him outside in the dark. Eliza slowly followed, as her trance dissipated. His arm was glowing a slight golden color, as if painted with the sun. She saw something new. The reflection Ferdinand's arm gave to this man's face was like if he had a mask on. She squinted to make sure when another figure appeared in the night. Isn't it illegal to ride a master, Ferd? Said a woman in a seductive voice. She bent over and took some dirt. As she was getting up, she slowly released the dirt. As it was falling, became a multitude of fireflies. Ferdinand let go of the master and focused his attention towards this woman. The area started to glow an eerie fluorescent color. How pretty! Eliza said out of impulse and covered her mouth. By her long, almost transparent hair, slender body and pointed ears, you knew she was from the capital of aesthetics, Lake Arn. By her crystal yellow armor and yellow cape, you knew she was the master of soul. She was overly beautiful but middle-aged. She walked very close to Ferdinand, placing her arm around his neck. So that's the girl. I am jealous. Then the master of soul stared at him. She got very close, as if she wanted to kiss him. Ferdinand pushed her off. This is too soon. Give me more time, said Ferdinand, already irritated. She will be all right. Trust us, said the master of mind. But the test, said Ferdinand, waving a fist. Now, temper, said the woman sarcastically. Who are you both? Asked Eliza. Both masters looked at each other, as if surprised Eliza could talk. Pardon our rudeness. I am Daramis, Master of Mind. She's a Gray, Master of Soul. Then Daramis took Eliza's hand, bent graciously while floating and kissed it gently. Eliza felt as if she floated for a moment. Maybe some fireflies were walking on her tummy also. As he finished, a Gray went to Eliza and took her hand with both of her hands. Her fiery orange eyes were wandering in the light of fireflies. We are here to take you, she wanted Eliza, but completed the sentence differently. To be a priestess. She then squeezed hard and put Eliza's hand on her bosom, uncovered through the armor, then got uncomfortably close.
Oh, really? Great,
said Eliza, almost not caring where Gray placed her hand, or understanding her intentions. First thing tomorrow, so please have a good night's rest, said Daramis, set on her. Eliza looked at his handsome face, but saw no sign of that grotesque mask she saw earlier. Then she ran inside the inn. She felt like it was very sudden, and didn't know how to say goodbye to everyone. She really hoped Mark and Luke could go with her. But the biggest thing on her mind now was that attractive man. A new sensation had dominated her whole being. She knew he would be there on her mind and her dreams. After Eliza left, Ferdinand felt the urge to fight both masters, knowing it would end tragically. But for whom? He knew these two very well, especially Gray. She looked at Ferdinand sarcastically, almost looking up while glancing at him, but he knew better. Gray's pain could be easily felt, the pain of a broken heart of long ago. He could only pretend and make his mind think of something else. The only master missing was the master of body. Master Malkar is probably at the temple already, said Daramis, reading Ferdinand's mind. Then I will go there. Take care of Eliza. But he said it is a threat. Then Ferdinand flew to the horizon in the dark and starry night. Chapter 2. The Journey to the Test. An ice field stretches throughout the horizon. It is almost dark. A woman stands, in golden full plate armor, white feather angel wings in its back. She holds a golden sword with a lion's hilt, split diagonally. The top half is composed of blinding light. Her winged helmet is slightly crushed. Her deep-set shadow stretches far behind her. In front, a flying giant worm fills the whole horizon, undulating, darker than night. Only the sucking sound of vacuum is heard, like a hum that populates the ear. The worm rushes towards the woman and the sucking air gets stronger. Its gaping mouth open, it lunges to swallow her. Then her shadow moves to the front. I will protect you, my queen, Eliza yelled on top of her lungs, then realized it was another nightmare. They had become more frequent. Eliza got up, while it was still dark. After washing up, and packing her essentials, she went and looked at her old room, thinking she might never return. As she headed out, a familiar face greeted her. Look. She giggled. Are you coming along? I might. He paused. And Mark? I don't know. Haven't heard anything. I'm sure he will try. So. Luke stared at her. Why were you? Eliza interrupted. I have a power. Look. She held her hand up and a small stream of water formed, then it gelled into a ball. Luke held out his finger, and tried to touch the ball of water, his finger glowing red. Wow! What does that do? Luke was as in a trance then said watch. As he touched the ball, it shaked uncontrollably, vibrating and eventually disintegrated. Eliza took her hand out quickly. I can feel that vibration, it tingles. I can even break rocks. Luke wasn't the type to brag, so Eliza was truly astonished at that comment. Cool. But can you guess Mark's? Well, he likes pranks, so it has to do with that. Yeah. Eliza thought about him watching her naked, always naughty. He breaks locks? No, he doesn't need to. There was a pause. I turn invisible, dimwit. Yells Mark, appearing as Luke jumped up. Mark seemed all packed, and dressed with some white robe. What's with those clothes? Asked Eliza, grabbing his sleeve. Initiate robes, twit. Don't you have yours? Then Mark pulled his sleeve off her hands. Luke then remembered. Oh, so that's what the package is. As he picked up a wrapped package from the outside, Eliza pulled the package off his hands. Well, I was just heading out. Do I have to wear it? Of course. And Luke also. Luke felt unsure about all this. Wait, I haven't decided yet. Mark then stared at Luke. Oh, so you aren't interested to know if you are good anymore? Mark always had a talent to say things that stung. Eliza always had a way to smooth Mark's blunders. Eliza felt this was her cue. I'm sure that you have your personal reason to think about it. But you want to be alone in this village? Eliza has a point. You will be making swords and armor all summer long. Luke knew Mark and Eliza were right, especially with the tournament starting in the following month. But he was afraid of his power, and even more of the truth. I'll go, but just to the test. Then I'll decide if I want to stay.
Great!
Responded Eliza and Mark together. Outside the inn, next to a carriage, Doramus and Igray watched the adolescents laugh. Leave them for a bit longer. They seem happy that way, said Doramus as Igray walked toward the inn. I don't want to be late. Malkier might show up. I will get them. As Doramus went, Igray felt freer to think about Ferdinand. He hadn't aged since she was a young priestess. That was hundreds of years ago. Igray was the only daughter of the last master of Sol, Deidre. One of the first masters that died battling the void. Igray was always a record breaker, being the youngest to have a major power, and becoming a master. And also of keeping the title for so long. And of keeping grudges with old flames. Are you all ready? said Doramus as he approached the group. Almost, sir, responded all three at different times. We have to go soon. Go to the carriage.
Yes, sir,
said all three at the same time. Something about Eliza attracted Doramus. He felt a little ashamed that he thought of such a young girl that way. She was at least 100 years younger than he was, he thought. Was it her innocence, maybe her jet black hair, or her eyes? He felt it was something else. It was the way she looked at his mask, hidden from normal eyes, and how she wasn't afraid. Her curious eyes, looking at his, with no shame. All three of them were around the carriage, looking at its odd vegetable shape, and of the horses, both made of something like plaster. The statue horses were acting as if they were alive. How do they work? Asked Eliza. They are animated like the real thing. Children, replied a gray. That's her power. Animating what never had life, said Doramus. I see you float all the time. Any other powers? Asked Mark. I read and control minds. Mark made a face. Oh, I'm not bragging, just making a point. Initiate. Hey, invading someone's mind should be a crime. Everyone laughed. Doramus got on the driver's seat outside, and as he held the reins, the carriage floated. They went in direction to the Temple of Mind. The forest looked thick and gloomy from the air, especially at night. Then a big section of the forest seemed illuminated with multitude of torches. Is the forest burning? Asked Luke. That's the city of the Wildmen, a walking city. They had heard the stories. A race composed of animals with the power to turn into humans, and of a mechanical city that walked on top of forests. But they flew too fast to see any minor details. As the forest ended, the sun gave off the first rays, and a plain revealed itself. A beautiful landscape with flowers and birds appeared slowly as they flew above. Then a temple and a tower could be seen. The tower shone a pale white, glistening with the first rays. The temple looked almost identical to the one near their hometown. A triangle roof, with columns in the front, adorned the temple. It had a pale gray stone color. It had no windows, and the columns reached the roof. They all land softly. Before you three can rest, I need you to take the test, said Doramus, very serious. I'll check on the healers, said a gray, going to the temple. All three were a little scared. Not everyone who took the test came out alive. They knew it from the villagers who lost families because of this. A priest walks towards them, a calm-looking fellow. This way, please. The inside was beautiful, strongly illuminated. Fountain in the main hall, two curving stairs, armors decorating the sides, and dark wood doors. The priest chose the farthest door behind the stairs. At entering, wide stairs illuminated with torches. Then a square hall full of guard priests, and the temple's most prized possession, the aspic crystal. Each temple has one sentient crystal, which is the source of all powers on that branch. This was the only one that can be approached. Two stone gates adorn the front and back of the crystal. Please put your belongings here. They will be on your room if you pass. Then the priest leaves. Eliza, I've been waiting for you, said a booming voice from the center of the room. You hear that? It was the crystal, said Mark, shaking. Eliza moved up some glass steps towards the giant blue crystal. The steps disappear after she walked on them. The crystal was 8-sided and at least 6 feet tall, floating in the air. There was a void below. Are you ready for your future?
Yes.
Whatever it might be.
Yes.
As you enter, you will see three possible future events in which your very being will be tested. Eliza swallowed hard. They might happen, they might not. You can only watch, do not interfere, Eliza's reflection on the crystal disappears. She almost felt as if she was here before. Touch me to begin. Eliza raised her hand as she touched. Her hand went through the crystal. After a step, she was inside. Then she vanished. The test had started in the southern part of the continent. After the cold mountains of Icewarm, there is a putrid swamp. This land was once the bloodless, loving capital of Gudo. All that is left is the abandoned Temple of Darkness, and its master, Dark Guild. Visitor, a favor? He said as he saw a familiar face entering the hall. Dark Guild wore the usual dark hooded robe of the Goodens, but underneath, a crystal armor of smoke gray shone in the occasional hole that the robe had. His long vivid red hair contrasted the somber look on his olive color eyes. He still spoke in simple sentences. The temple was dirty and full of roots on the walls. The swamp flooded the floor and was hard to distinguish where the swamp ended and the temple began. Ferdinand slowly walked on the floor. He took a root blocking the stairway and melted it with his hand. Golden light illuminated the dark hall for a moment. Would have met you in a more convenient. It's okay. I like to pull weeds. Ferdinand said it with a double meaning. None with darkness anymore. No help. There are students. They just can't pass the caves. And the harbor? Ferdinand seemed surprised. Dark Guild walked up the stairs to his chamber. A balcony was at the end, slightly covered with vines. He went and pointed at a small break in the mountains, and a small harbor could be seen with the morning light. Huh? A relic of the past. I can contact the Macrahenians. Dark Guild's eyes illuminated for a second, maybe a glimmer of hope. What do you want? Enter the tournament. Fight with two people. Well, the first is Malkur. Do what you will with him. And the second, I will tell you once you deal with Malkur. When? I just want you to be gentle with her at the same time, but far away. A dark hall, devoid of decoration, only a single figure on a throne. Slumped and pensive, unmoving as if not breathing. No details escaped the shadows, only that he had long, unkempt silver hair. Then a robed figure appeared in front of the throne, kneeling on one leg, face looking down. Sire, the masters are making their move. Is it time already? Said the figure on the throne, as if to himself. What should we do? Nothing. Just wait. But the figure on the throne got up, angered. He moved to the robed figure, then grabbed and cursed his face. As long as the goddess is without a shadow, she is nothing. The long nails slightly scratched the robed figure's face, but he didn't even blink. I understand. We will wait. We will move. Not yet. As the figure that was on the throne turned his back, the robed figure disappeared. Sitting, he murmured. Had you once, will have you again. My love, while licking the blood from his long nails. Chapter 3, Future Dreams. All was darkness. Eliza felt swallowed in it. Her fear had dissipated. After walking a long time, she hadn't really thought about the implication of failure. But she felt she couldn't fail. A small ray of light appeared in front, and Eliza ran towards it. She was back at the prairie, but something was different. Everything seemed black and white. People were running and screaming out of the main road. Then Luke's stepfather went right through her. I'm not truly here. It feels like a dream, she said under her breath. Eliza walked to whatever everyone was running from. Then she saw an army moving forward. It filled the road completely. She couldn't see who the soldiers were. As she drew closer, she saw. They're dead, she said, falling to the floor. The army consisted of dead people, flesh hanging, bones showing, all moving on a fast pace. In front, two live soldiers were on horses. They galloped very close. "So, Eliza, you came to join us?" She panicked for a moment. "Can they see me?" she thought. Then she heard a response. "I came to stop you, whatever this will take." She heard her own voice. She didn't dare to look either way, or get off the road. The other person on a horse said, "I'll finish her quickly. Watch." Then a flash, and a wave of water could be seen. The horses fell on their side, and both men fell near her. She recognized them. "Mark, look, where did you come from?" Then she realized that they fell from the horses. They got up. Their eyes glazed, and ignored her. Then she looked back. "You're next." Mark couldn't believe it was already his turn. He wanted his father here. He knew it was wishful thinking. His father disappeared many years ago. He walked towards the crystal. He looked back to see Luke's reaction. At times Mark thought how he befriended a good one. The last war was horrendous. It then became the genocide of the Goodens. It was now illegal to kill one, but thinking how racial hate formed the world, he knew everyone would ignore such a law. He wished he didn't have to live in a world of hate. The goal of all racial capitals was to eliminate all the others. Something the Goodens almost achieved. "Hurry or you will fall." Mark hurried up and looked at the crystal. "What is bothering you, Mark?" "Great aspect, why do we live in a world of hate? This pains you. This is caused by the goddess's sin." "Her sin? Can I do something about it?" "One step at a time. Find her father." "But he died at sea. He is in a temple on the western sea. But come and pass your test first." Mark felt something he had never felt before. "Hope. This stops here." Eliza saw someone very similar to her, a voice like hers, but didn't think it was her. She wore the robes of a priestess, and a shawl with the color of her temple. But because of the lack of color, this had to be a nightmare. Why would she attack her best friends? Her face had no visible remorse. Why would Mark and Luke come to attack the village? And why were there undead with them? Nothing made sense, and she started to feel sick. Mark and Luke ran towards the Eliza in the dream, and started fighting. "No, please stop, please. Please," she said until her voice was a whimper. Then everything went dark. Eliza woke up and was again on a dream. But the place was different. She was in the middle of what seemed a cemetery. All the crypts looked the same, and had the same tombstones. Then she heard screams. Suddenly a lot of people appeared around her. Then they started to fall, dead. Lots of bodies covered the cemetery. Her body started to tremble uncontrollably, and then some darkness started to cover the area. A figure with a mask appeared near her. Soldiers were running towards him, but fell before they were close. Then masters and priests were trying to get close. Time was running fast. She felt the urge to get close. There were masters she never seen before. The figure was covered with a dark robe covering his whole body. The mask looked familiar. Then she saw someone like her again, walking slowly towards the figure. She had a sword this time, but everything was too dark for any details. She saw her other self crying. The masked figure spoke. "What is a world without you? You selfish jerk. That's what I should ask. Kill me." "No, I can't. Kill me. There has to be a way. Please. For our—" Then she saw her other self lower her head and mechanically murmur, "No love, no hate, no low." She stabbed him, the body bowled down, and the darkness started to disappear. Then she took the sword and aimed it at her chest. "No, no, stop!" Eliza fell to her knees hard. Her other self fell slowly. "Why? Why?" "Next one." Luke felt empty. He wanted to feel something. Fear. Excitement. Happiness. But no feelings came, as if he had already died. He wanted to know why Mark was looking at him. Very few Goodens ever passed this test. Some said it was the lack of emotions. As he started to walk up, he felt what it was. It was the feeling that it might be better to be swallowed up inside the crystal and never come out. He knew Goodens were racially emotionless, but he did feel something. Wanting to die had to be a feeling. What do you have in mind, Dark Lude?
I'm sorry, Great Aspect, but my name is Luke.
You don't remember your dark name? You know the good and all? Your true name on your heart, your dark name on your lips.
Yes, your father would be proud.
You know of my father?
Go to Volusia, be a guard, you will know the rest.
Thank you, Greatness.
Before that, you must survive this test.
Touch me to continue.
Luke touched it and wanted to come out soon. Eliza was still on her knees when the dream changed. She felt pain from her knees, maybe bleeding. Her emotional pain was worse. Then she noticed the new surroundings. She was on a room. The walls had lights and shapes inside what seemed black boxes. They had underneath small rectangular alphabet tables. Some shapes came out of the walls and shone an eerie monochrome hue. They looked like words in the air. She had never seen anything like this. It was strange, but beautiful.
This is your last day alive, Mother.
Then she saw herself. This time she wore armor, similar to the one in her nightmares. She had a sword in each hand. This other self was hunched and her voice sounded sarcastic.
Evil. Eliza felt afraid of this other version of herself.
From the other side came a woman. She was very tall, long-haired, almost nude, and with a shining whip. She spoke harshly, as if spitting.
At last, I thought you died.
Why did you make me?
I wanted to abort you, actually.
Why you never loved me?
You were rejected, imperfect.
You should have died.
Eliza was in shock. Her heart pounded hard. She thought it would explode.
Then both women started fighting. Was this her mother? Why did she say those things?
She then realized both were moving so quickly, they seemed a blur. She felt something scratch her. Her arm was bleeding. How was this possible?
Eliza ran quickly to a wall and said.
Things started to catch on fire. Everything went so quickly, she felt like vomiting. Then, a splash of warm liquid hit her face.
The tall woman fell beside her, cut in half at her torso.
Her other self, breathing hard, spat on this woman's face.
Die here, you miserable bitch.
As her other self left, Eliza threw up acid.
A voice from the wall said self-destruct in 1 minute. The woman whispered, it is done, my poor.
She spat blood. So sorry.
Eliza extended a hand towards this woman.
Please leave.
Eliza was surprised.
Then a series of explosions were heard all over.
She got up and ran where her other self went.
Fire started to fill the hall, and she started to burn. Her skin smoked and the pain was unbearable.
There was light at the end.
She jumped towards it.
Then she saw she was falling from a great distance, and an enormous city was below.
She felt like screaming, but there was nothing else left.
She just wanted to die.
Then she remembered
possible futures.
Could she change them?
Did she see them for a reason?
Must be stronger.
Must change.
Eliza felt light and closed her eyes, and the wind stopped.
The medic priests were ready when Eliza fell out of the crystal.
She was unconscious, burned and bleeding.
Take her quickly.
I don't want to see even one scar.
Yes, Master Gray.
Gray was surprised at the level of damage she had received.
Almost like hers, when she took it.
Eliza was gently floated up the stairs by the medics.
out to the infirmary. Aren't you surprised of her growth in only 3 years? Please, greatness, stop bothering me. I knew she would make it. The crystal shone a deep blue color for a second. Take care of the other two. I will retire for now, she said to the priests.
Yes, master.
Agrey knew this was only the beginning. Chapter 4, Time to Connect. The morning was bright and there were no clouds. The sun had that orangey glow that wanted to consume all. The artificial wooden island of Makerhun rocked and wavered on the ocean, made entirely of wooden planks, full of places for boats of all sizes to park. It all was a labyrinth of wood, rope and salt stains. Most boats were the permanent type. Living quarters, lines and hanging clothes were everywhere. There was a hustle of people all over. Kids were playing in the water, jumping from an occasional hole in the island. There was no end.
Well, Joe, I don't see a problem here.
Ferdinand didn't like the leader's attitude. He was complaining about the problems of making a new transport route, especially if they were to the south, when they were in the north.
Fur, even if it is you requesting, I can make exceptions. I am not like my deceased race, but using force.
Please. Then something occurred to Long Arms Joe, an idea that would solve most of his problems.
Oh, I know, I will do this, but you must help me.
What is it?
It better not take much time.
The Golden Cruiser has been missing for 3 years now.
You want me to find it?
The boat was supposed to be unsinkable, so it must be adrift. Ferdinand knew just floating around was impossible. The Mecarenians roamed the sea like combing a beach. They would have found it by now. It must be hidden somewhere.
Any suggestions?
Ferdinand sarcastically thought about the few places a gigantic cruiser made of gold and jewels could be hidden.
What about the Western Sea?
Where the Temple of Matter used to be.
We searched there.
What about Empty Island? Joe had forgotten about the legends, an island that used to be a prison.
But when you went, there was nothing there. Only a feeling that something should be.
How would the Golden be there?
We have no time for Maru, Lightning Cat, chases.
Search an island can open the way.
I'll need some time to power it.
The Sorganians used to live in a floating continent. It was now underwater, but the Tower of Barriers was there.
It could open anything.
Heifer. You must be desperate.
Opening a minor route to a dead region can't be.
You want your boat or what?
The open air was starting to bother Ferdinand.
Joe, who was used to this weather, was just squinting a little. He had shirtless, only some short ragged pants on.
He was almost bald, a light tan, and a thin mustache.
His light hair contrasted with his skin, and his ever-appearing smile.
His arms were a little longer than usual, reflecting his power.
He needed no weapons.
Okay then,
where's that island of yours?
Ferdinand then thought three birds with one stone.
Mark came out of the crystal, only with minor scratches on him.
He was pensive and distant.
He felt a new understanding of what his future could be.
Are you all right?
Ha, never been better.
Is there anything to eat?
The priests were surprised.
No one came out this test in a good mood.
You should rest first. Your meal.
Where is Eliza?
She is being treated.
Was critical.
It will take some time.
Mark was shocked.
What would be so bad about Eliza's future?
He thought about his father also.
Master Doramus, where is he?
Upstairs, in his chambers.
Mark ran without thinking anything else.
Then Lou came out.
A priest gasped.
Oh my.
Emergency.
Hurry!
Lou had what seemed the blade of a sickle impaled on his lower chest. He was still dizzily walking, going down the steps.
Blood poured on the glass below.
It's an energy blade.
Get a TK, telekinetic,
here. The blade was familiar. It was the weapon of choice for Gooden Juggernaut armors. As Luke started to fall, two priests grabbed him. Then he looked at one of them, a glazed, crazy look on his eyes. Oh no, Berserker. It was too late. Luke's hand shone red and started to vibrate. He grabbed the priest and an explosion of blood was all that was seen. Mark was already going to the second floor stairs when Duramas floated down. He touched Mark and made him float downward, pushing him to the floor below. He ended up in the main hall. What's the big deal?
Wait, I want to talk.
Damn it. A gray went running past him also. While he was in the floor, she stepped on him.
Oh great!
I'm the doormat. Come on, everyone. Just step on me and push me around. Then he saw her face. She was crying. Oh no,
look.
Mark got up and ran fast as he could. As he got into the basement chamber, all he could see was blood. His mind is too far gone. Can't control him. I'll use a golem. Duramas and Gray were battling what seemed to be Luke, but an eerie red aura came out of him.
I have to save him,
said Mark while disappearing. Gray touched the loose glass and bricks on the floor, her hands cut and bruised. She tried to concentrate, but it was hard with all the body parts around. I'll keep him in the air. You throw him to the abyss. Mark had to hurry. The hole below the crystal was supposed to be bottomless. He went close behind him, but his body started to shake uncontrollably. What are you going to do, fool? Was all Mark could think. Then a giant of stone and glass moved in front of Luke. Mark had to move elsewhere. The floor was slippery and made sounds when he stepped. He didn't want to know why. Duramas floated close and dived after Luke. He had to touch him to make him float.
Wait!
He sees you. Mark though, what the hell am I doing? He could have it in the master. Luke pushed Duramas to the wall with incredible speed. Duramas went unconscious, his armor cracked. He then ran toward the golem and hit him. 1,000 punches could be heard, but not seen. He went crazy until the golem was rubble. Then he walked towards a gray, foam pouring out of his mouth. She started to walk backwards, afraid, until she tripped and fell sitting down. What can I do? How do I stop him? Thought Mark. A major wave of water rushed in the area. Then another. Mark almost went to the abyss below the crystal. He jumped and swam a little. Everything was water for a second. Then he saw Luke unconscious in the blood-stained water, and grabbed him. As the water drained and receded, Mark walked a little, dragging Luke. Wow, that was close. Oh, what happened? Then he saw both masters near the stairs, standing and looking at Eliza, covered in bandages, unconscious in the floor. Sayer China's usually like all other capitals, only its rays can enter. But once every 3 years a tournament is celebrated, in commemoration to peace in the planet. If you wanted to fight, you could do it safely in it. At least that was the mentality. A coliseum was built, especially to hold powers that might be too dangerous. Some of the rarest races could be seen at this time also, like Garukians, Blissfrauds, Ambrodians, and Wildmen. It was almost a carnival of color and happiness, but no music. Many tried to revive music and song, but no one had the talent to learn it. Then everyone remembers why the tournament is celebrated for those races that are gone forever. The evening sun was a lot more forgiving. Ferdinand felt happy. He was going to make a lot of jewels tonight. His music was rare and made it valuable. He wanted for the prairie to have a new water system, but it was hard to find labor. Some monetary incentive should help. He remembered when this capital was built, when Master Longhorn told him of his dreams, and how Master Deidre laughed when he said it was too dangerous. or when Master Daramus the First shrugged and Master Marlet's jokes and attitude, Master Darkman would just lean on a wall somewhere. Take care of our children, they said. How stupid and selfish of them. Now at least he felt they were even. The bard is here. Come in, everyone. Drinks at half price. The city inn had mostly rowdy Carrigenians, but the occasional outsider could be seen. Because of the tournament, it was one of many brick inns in the center. Being near the Colosseum had its benefits. Ferdinand then set his instrument, sat in the atrium and asked for his ice-warm drink. A cute-looking girl on skins and barefoot ran towards him. He barely noticed her as he tuned his lute. How, mister? You a musician?
Yes, I am.
What do you want? Ferdinand recognized the girl as a wildman, probably a Megru, wild tiger. She was barely clothed, smelly and had unkempt orange hair with black stripes. The whiskers on her cheeks were distracting. Can you sing in our town?
We pay good.
When?
Tonight?
I'm already booked here. She grabbed her hair and pulled it. She started crying. Some loose hair fell to the ground. Everyone was waiting for the music to start, and were getting annoyed with the wild one. I'll promise tomorrow, all day if you want.
You can listen for free tonight.
Oh really?
Thanks, mister.
So before I sing, what is your name?
Who is your family?
Name is Meru. I'm leader. Last of main Fami Leash. She had a beaming smile now, one of pride. In front of him was the new leader of the Wildmen. It couldn't be a coincidence. Then he remembered they couldn't break their word. Their leaders were absolute. Meru, I will sing for you and your people, but you have to promise.
Promise?
Promise what?
Say yes first and then I'll tell you.
Like stealing candy from a baby.
Ah, well.
Yes, but nothing dirty. Meru was looking at her chest, thinking how young she was. Wildmen usually had only one thing in mind, survival of the species.
You said yes. Remember, I will sing, but...
You and your people will do whatever I ask afterwards. She just got up and walked out.
We couldn't stop her.
Daramus was on the infirmary, asking what had happened. Eliza was on critical condition, but somehow got up and walked two flights of stairs to the basement. She also used an incredible amount of power. A gray had retired to her temple, feeling responsible for leaving her post. 12 people were dead. It was one of the biggest incidents ever recorded. Luke was deemed too dangerous to train. Daramus was considering despecting. There has to be another way. My opinion is nothing, but he is my friend regardless. Mark felt like screaming, crying and many other emotions. Despecting was the process in which your soul was sealed from the aspect that gave you power. Most people died soon after. His power is very dangerous. He overpowered us. Daramus almost felt ashamed. An untrained kid who could easily win over two masters.
I'll
find someone who can help. Daramus went closer to Mark, nailed to be at a level. He was still floating. I know he is your friend, and about the rumors. But your father? He was an expert in contraptions. I'm sure he can. It was hard to talk to someone who already knew what you wanted to say. What about now? It was Eliza that saved us. Eliza was being treated in the bed next to Mark. Even though Mark had already left the bed and was sitting in a chair beside it, Luke was in the next bed over.
Please,
just seal his mind or something. Well, I'll consult it with the others.
Thanks.
Don't thank me yet. I will suggest it, but vote against him. Mark was a little disappointed. He also felt useless, but he would never give up on his friend.